Today's program was brought to you by Copper and Kings, pure copper pot-distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. For more information, visit copperandkings.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
The Speakeasy is produced by Heritage Radio Network, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station devoted to all things food and beverage. Help keep HRN alive by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate. And I will buy you a drink the next time I see you.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll load. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues. That's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And you are listening to the greatest radio station on the planet. This is Heritage Radio Network. And for a fair amount of people out there know that I play music. I'm in a band called Brothers. Actually, the show, The Speakeasy, the opening ditty is actually a song called Whiskey and Loose Women by my band Brothers. And before I moved... Actually, when I moved to New York City about 11 years ago, I had another band called 20 Minutes to Vegas. And it was a pretty raucous band. I mean, like, there was no song called Whiskey and Loose Women, but there was probably a fair amount of that going on. And one of my oldest and dearest friends, Chris Barrett, was playing in that band with us then. And at the time... Right before I had moved here, I guess it had been a...
All this is in Oklahoma City.
All this is in Oklahoma City, yeah. I just started bartending. I'd been an enthusiast for a very long time. And
Enthusiast,
yeah. That's for mom.
A drinker.
I'd been an enthusiast, and I had just started bartending maybe 2 or 3 years before I moved here. And my buddy Chris was... bartending at that time as well. After moving here and realizing the potential of what could
the craft movement,
the craft, yeah, it you know, this was like just over a decade ago, so it had just started like building up, and New York City was like the place to be, right?
Yeah,
it always has been.
Yeah, we were ground zero for that.
Yeah, and it's been really interesting to watch my friend Chris Barrett kind of like kick ass in Oklahoma City, which is not—it's not a place known. It hadn't been known for cocktails, but he's running one of the most kick-ass bar programs at a place called Ludovine in Oklahoma City, and I'm really glad to have him here in the studio today. Welcome to the show, Chris Barrett.
Yeah, welcome. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. It's always great to have you in New York City. It's great to have you in the studio, and yeah, man. Like we got a bit to talk about, man. The cocktail scene. I remember going. My band Brothers was actually on tour about 5 years ago or so. And
right.
We popped in. We made sure that on the tour we popped into Oklahoma City and got to play at like...
VZDs.
My favorite venue, VZDs, which used to be like a place we played all the time. That was our stomping ground.
Live next door.
Yeah, exactly. And during that visit to Oklahoma City... My brother and I got to pop around a little bit and kind of see what was going on with like the Plaza District and 23rd Street, even like Western Avenue, in downtown, and see quite shockingly how much that city has progressed as far as the food and beverage world, and specifically with cocktails. There's so much going on, and like just the revitalization of the Plaza District, which is 16th Street, close to downtown, which was kind of a defunct kind of theater district at a point, but now it's revitalized, and even like downtown and the Plaza District
and Midtown, where Ludovine is.
Yeah, it's really impressive, man.
Blown up. I mean, places where there was nobody 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody went to those places. They were desolate. People have moved in, opened bars, restaurants, music venues, It's crazy. You wouldn't recognize it if you haven't been there in 10 years.
Absolutely. I was completely shocked and blown away by it. And I was a little pissed that I sold my house when I moved here because I did notice that the market value has gone up. I mean, it quadrupled. I saw it up for sale recently, and it quadrupled from what I bought it for. When me and my brother sold our house, it had doubled, which helped pay for the move here for sure. But but even more than that, it would just be nice to have like a place to crash whenever I want to go to Oklahoma City.
Well, you can stay at my house.
Well, that's true. Yeah. All right. Well, the offer's it's on the air. It's documented.
Scheduling a road trip.
when you have me in your place and I get drunk and screw things up, you'll have to remember
that's
that offer.
Right. I've done that at your house too.
That's true. That actually reminds me of a situation a few years back when you visited. Yep. But we won't go into that on the air. So
is Ludovine then the kind of is this the place that's cracking the egg on the omelet that is cocktails, or are you sort of in line after the leader? Where do you fall?
Yeah,
on that?
I mean, I would say Ludovine was the first place in town that was really doing craft cocktails.
Yeah, and the cocktail bars kind of like have traditionally in the past couple decades or so. They follow the culinary movement.
Right. And it's been kind of a double-headed dragon, Ludovine, with the food on one side and cocktails on the other. The food being the first farm-to-table restaurant in Oklahoma City as well, where they deal within a 100-mile radius with local farms.
That's amazing. A lot of farms there, though, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you get outside of the city, it's rural, there's tons of farms. And the chefs, Jonathan Stranger and Russ Johnson, who had been elsewhere cooking, came back home to Oklahoma where they're from and really put this thing together.
They ventured out, got some tools, brought them home.
And made connections with the local farms. Mm-hmm. And they're excellent cooks, and they're getting great local products.
Well, you guys have had a ton of press. I mean, like, and that's... to me, not a strange thing, because you've definitely been like spearheading this movement in Oklahoma City. Anytime that like I read anything about like food or beverage and in like the Midwest to the Southwest Heartland, it's Ludovine always comes up. You guys have had tons of accolades and really amazing stuff. Actually, like I was, I remember, and I think about this often. Especially, being in New York, being in Brooklyn, the time that we started seeing all the attention focus not solely on New York and LA and San Francisco and Chicago and like Miami, there was an article in Imbibe magazine where it was one of the issues that came out, and all of a sudden it was like Kansas City. In Omaha, and
St. Louis, Tulsa.
Yeah, totally. And so that was like a really beautiful turning point in the beverage world. For sure,
it's like the flowers finally in full bloom.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then there was also like I remember going to Austin, Texas, and even though that one was always thrown in with the other like bigger like hub cities, with Atlanta and New York and LA and all that stuff. But like there was. Especially with like the TABC in Texas and like Able Commission in Oklahoma and some other like stricter laws for the actual procuring of kind of rare ingredients, for instance like House Alpens, not being able to get like allspice dram for a while or creme de violette, but reading about it and then reading in this certain article of this certain issue of Imbibe talking with these different bartenders, they were saying that they were like reading about these products that they couldn't get, and then so they were forced to like start making them on their own, and that kind of drive to me is just a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like if they're willing to like go out and make a thing that.
Well,
they
yeah, can I mean, to... you go somewhere else, or you read about something that has a certain flavor profile, and it's just not available for you in a smaller market. So you're like, I want that flavor.
Right.
I've got to figure out.
I've either got to bootleg it or make it myself.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, it does drive creativity on that end.
And also, like you were saying, you know, using local ingredients, like not only with the kitchen, but, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things about Ludovine is that they get a lot of cool things in their walk-in, and they just, behind the bar, they let us go in there and just grab whatever we want and play with it.
Nice. Dude, so I know, like, I went to Oklahoma City a couple years ago now. A year and a half ago. It was during my dad's birthday, November. It was around Thanksgiving, and we made it a point to bring a big group of people to Ludovine. We had dinner, and it was, man, I was just like, I've been tracking your progress and like your work through the years, and how you've been really like ushering in the classic cocktail, the spirit, if you will, into Oklahoma City. And, you know, we arrived and, you know, this, I was still at Prime Meats at the time, and, you know, Punch is a big thing for us. And it was so cool to like roll in and see, like, we were greeted with a moose booze, as we call
yes.
it,
moose
some punches. And then like the cocktails were kick ass. The food was amazing as well, but it was just so refreshing and like Souther said, inspiring to like see a place just, really, like, not just like for like a smaller market, if you will, but for any market, you're just fucking kicking ass, man. So it was like,
right. I think it's you're you know, you maybe think of yourself possibly as unlucky to not live in a metropolitan situation like New York City, but then you've got this lucky aspect that we don't have. You've got much more, you know, again, farmed produce that's local that you can get in the kitchen that you can translate to the bar,
right?
Be creative with.
And well, I mean, at any time I could have come here.
Yeah. You know? Well, we talked about it actually.
and there were times when I thought about it.
Yeah.
And
I told you that it was, I remember telling you this, we talked about it and you were like, dude, should I move to New York and start like, dude,
right. And when one of the things is like, okay, yeah, I can do that and I can become part of it. So I could, it would definitely be cool. It would be a learning experience. It would be awesome. But then also, I got this opportunity in Oklahoma City to take it and show it to people who don't already know all about it.
Sure, yeah.
And really...
And you're now pushing some limits of creativity in Oklahoma City that some of the folks in New York City aren't doing. Like, you're now doing themed menus every time, right?
For the past three seasonal menus, we've done themed menus. In the fall, we did a menu that all the drinks were named after different parts of town, the Midtown area, the plaza that we talked about. Mm-hmm. And then
was there a Mesta Park?
There wasn't a Mesta Park.
Is there an Edgemere?
No. Well, Edgemere, that's over by the Paseo, and Mesta Park, that's
so you did the
close enough to Midtown. Yeah. You know, that. There were some places that got left out, and yeah. I'm sorry.
Well, the Paseo district is like known for like old hippies. Did you?
Yeah.
Was there patchouli in the Paseo?
No, hotel? But there was a mushroom tincture.
Oh, there you go. That's what I'm talking about right there.
And some sage.
Well, of course. Yeah, there you go. That all makes
Wards
sense.
Off the evil hippies.
But yeah, that was the fall. And then spring this year, we did the Beatles.
Yeah, that's the one I read about when it came out.
Yeah, the Revolver.
Yeah. Which we took the 14 songs.
14?
Off the...
Were there 14 on that album?
Yeah. The British version.
Uh-huh.
The American version had 12. But we did the British version and...
That's going deep.
We took each song and just kind of interpreted it in cocktails. And then this summer we're doing the Westerns, so Western movies.
Which I'm psyched on, man. I read that menu, and I saw it a couple of weeks ago.
Well, we just released it July 1st.
Yeah. And it was just like, dude, it's amazing. Like the, what's the one with the mule?
Well, there's three categories on the menu. There's two mules for Sister Sarah.
Right. So obviously it's a mule cocktail.
Two mules. Then there's two other lists. There's the Magnificent Seven and the Hateful Eight. And the Magnificent Seven category are movies from 1939 to 1960, where the hero in the movie is a good guy, the sheriff or whatnot. And then the Hateful Eight are movies from 1960 to the present, where the hero is kind of an anti-hero, an outlaw, or
That's the category that I like.
And so the Magnificent Seven, where they're good, they're the good guys. Those drinks are more light and refreshing, whereas the Hateful Eight are more bitter, like boozy.
A white hat,
white hat, like and the black hat. Yeah. Yeah.
Curious which side of the menu I'd go for. Probably the bitter brooding side.
And the Hateful Eight, we also did eight spirits. So there's a cocktail with rum. There's a cocktail with rye. There's a cocktail with bourbon, one with brandy, one with mezcal, tequila, gin, and what was the other one?
Vodka?
No, we didn't vodka.
Pisco, cachaça?
Oh, scotch.
Scotch. Oh, yeah. Jesus. What?
So,
what do we think of that one?
How is how are these menus being received by your guests?
Oh,
like,
they love
do they get into it?
Yeah, yeah.
Also, you guys get a lot of press for like for these themed menus. Like, I know that with the Beatles.
We did with the Beatles. of course, I mean, this was just something that I kind of woke up with the idea to do because I'm a huge Beatles fan, and I went in and I told Colby, the other bartender, Ludovine, I was like, okay, I got this idea. It's kind of high concept, but we're going to do the Beatles Revolver album. And I just thought it was a good idea. And then I, you know, told, you know, my boss and the other people who work with us, and they ran with it. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm not the only one that loves the Beatles. Everybody loves the Beatles. And so it just kind of, it did blow up there for a bit.
Yeah. And like, I read some stuff in like the Daily Oklahoman and the Oklahoma Gazette. And like, you've gotten some really amazing press regarding that. I'm a huge fan of theme menus. It's also like so much more fun to
work have backwards.
To have the name first and then like build on that inspiration. You know?
I mean, I like the themed idea because it's it then suddenly all your guests are having a shared experience.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They're all looking at this same theme. They're not just looking for a martini or a Moscow Mule or whatever. I mean, there's a reason that it's all on this menu together.
Yeah. I mean, and actually, you're an inspiration because I was here last May and I was looking at your cocktail menu and you're like, yeah, they're all trains. And I'm like, brilliant.
Oh, thanks,
I got
to
fucking see something like that.
It's fun, man. Theme menus are, they are the shit.
Yeah. So
nice. Plus, you know, it really then so that the guests are all having a shared experience and then your team, you're all having a shared experience of coming up with these ideas. You don't do it all alone, right?
No. It's a very small bar. So there's only two.
Don't talk to me about small bars.
Well, it's bigger than your bar, but we only have two bartenders.
Oh, wow.
It's just
including yourself.
Yeah. Oh. Me and one other guy. And then we have the bar back. The other guy's Colby Poulin, and he's from New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the two of us. So we come up with these and bounce ideas off each other.
That's amazing.
Some drinks I come up with, some drinks he comes up with. Sometimes it's more of a collaborate thing.
But
it's cool having a bar staff that small keeps consistency.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, my team is myself and three others, just four of us.
Yeah.
So I totally understand that, but I also understand that there's no way that I could do even the menu at Amore, which is only 10 items long. I couldn't do it alone.
Yeah. Well, no.
No way.
So I'm thinking back on our times in Oklahoma City and playing rock and roll shows, and I remember you were like, I guess we were in our early 20s, right? Something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
probably 19 till I don't know how old you were when you moved away, like 27?
23 or?
Nah.
I'm 35 now.
Right.
I don't really mean to broadcast that, but I was like 24 or something like that. But so we were fairly young dudes, playing rock and roll shows, hanging out at the Waterford Hotel when
the
Rolling
Stones came to town. Yeah.
But I remember you you were like the dude, like kind of the oddball who was always like drinking scotch.
Yeah.
Do you do a lot of scotch drinks at Ludovine, or you're just keeping it open, or like, obviously seasonal?
Yeah, I always try to do at least one scotch, you know, just kind of have that option for.
Yeah.
And for the person that likes scotch and has never really had it in a cocktail before.
Yeah. I think there's that's actually one of the things that I've been dealing with a lot lately is like dealing, like figuring out like how to do like the perfect Scotch summer cocktail. You know, like my go-to would be whiskey soda all the time. But like as far as like an actual cocktail, it's like
Presbyterian.
Presbyterian works. That's, I mean, obviously, then the penicillin.
Penicillin, course, yeah.
Making me reach, you know, these old juicy drinks I don't have.
I know.
You don't forget them, you know. It's like those muscles atrophy a little bit. It's weird that I have to, my team and I have to know all the drinks that we make. And because we are able to make every drink we've ever made, so we have to know 5 years worth of drinks that we make. Mm-hmm. Plus, we have to know every drink we can't make so that we can say why we can't make that.
Right. What's what is lime juice?
And direct them to something else. Yeah. What's a barback?
What was your first, just out of curiosity, what was your first, like the cocktail that you would drink that kind of like inspired you to get into all this nonsense?
It was probably more of a series of drinks.
Yeah.
that's how they happen.
Yeah, they usually come in a series.
They come in threes.
Well, you know, I started bartending after I applied for a waiter job, and they needed a bar back that weekend because it was Valentine's Day weekend, and they're like, "We'll start training you waiting next week, but can you help us bar back?" And so I did, and I guess I did a good job because they were like, "We got a bartender leaving. Can you start bartending next week?" And I'm like, "Sure, absolutely." So I go through start training, and the owner of the place is. I'm asking all these questions. He's like, "Have you ever bartended before?" And he said, and I'm like, "No." And he gets this look like, "Oh shit." I hired somebody who doesn't know what he said.
I logged a lot of hours on the other side.
And then he's like, "Well, I guess you got to learn somewhere." And
begrudging.
Yeah.
Welcome to the team, I guess.
And then, so for the next couple of years, you know, just bartending, slinging drinks, speed, not really getting into the craft side of things. And it wasn't until, later on, I started reading books and getting interested in the craft side of things because I think when you bartend at 24 and you play in a band, you're like, I'm a rock star and the bartending is my day job.
Yeah.
And then at some point, you're like, this is my profession. I should probably know everything I can about it. So started reading up, and then I came and saw you and your brother here, and you guys took me out to all these great craft cocktail bars in New York, and having like classic cocktails like Manhattans and Martinez and just blowing my mind as well as like the craft cocktails that places were coming up with.
Well, I think that
and so when I got home, I just, that's like, okay, now I knew there was an idea out there.
Yeah.
I just wasn't able to see it yet. And then when I came to New York, I saw it and I was like, okay, grabbed a hold of it and really started throwing myself into it.
Yeah. There was a point in, it was right before I started bartending, and one of my favorite people in the world, Brian Neal.
Yeah.
He actually ended up hiring me at his bar, the Electro Lounge in Oklahoma City. It's not there anymore, but, cause he turned it into a restaurant. But he was the first person to make me a martini, close to the right way. There was no such thing as orange bitters in Oklahoma, or probably even Texas or anywhere around there.
Was there vermouth?
There was vermouth. He used vermouth, and he was like, "This is important because."
And actually, the bitters bottle was a dusty old little bottle, like that. Most people thought was Worcestershire. And
totally.
You guys serve steak. Why do you have that?
What are you doing with that?
Bitters. What do you do with that? Oh, there's this old guy that comes in.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
there was very little, you know. But then, like, that was to me. And then, actually, having a Manhattan at VZD's, Mike, who bartended there for a long time, who can never.
He's still working in the city too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he could never hear your order. It was really annoying. Yeah, he worked in a rock and roll like venue, the old bar, and I think he'd worked there for a long time, so he blew out his eardrums. Mm-hmm. But it was always like you had to order your drink like 5 times from him before he'd actually
with some hand gestures.
Yeah, but he made me a Manhattan on my 21st birthday. Actually, He made one for me, one for my brother, and it was actually stirred. He actually used bitters, and I asked for a twist because I the cherries weren't great then. But those were the things like that really changed my thought process on like actually drinking at bars, because like I could make those for myself at home mm-hmm. and do them the right way by the books, the classic cocktail books, but. Like you say, like a Martinez, you know, like mm-hmm. who knew?
Right.
Yeah.
Until you have one and it's made the right way and or just made for you, actually, because, you know, but it, like a really that.
For me, if I had to pinpoint it, for me, it was a Gibson.
Oh, yeah.
I've always already kind of been an old man inside the way that I eat and drink. Mm-hmm. And that pickled onion was the draw for me.
Yeah.
The thing about
And then when I went somewhere and had one with a nice pickled onion, that changed the game.
The thing about the Gibson, though, what's cool about it, I mean, it is a martini with a different garnish.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing about it is, like, when people order Gibson, and I've noticed this, like, since forever ago, you know, people have their customers and just everyone, they have their own, like, way of how they like their martini. But if someone orders a Gibson, it's by the books, a Gibson. Mm-hmm. No one says dry
right.
or
that's
like
true, actually.
They just say, I want a Gibson.
It's the same fucking drink yeah. with a different garnish, but it eliminates all those modifiers.
That's true.
Which I think is a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, are we coming close to the end?
We got a few minutes.
All right, cool.
Let's talk about the midnight toast.
There's another thing that you're doing over there that I think is amazing, where you're already bringing cocktails to the front of the scene. You're mm-hmm. making headway with being creative and inventive with, you know, products that you can finally get and products that you get off the farms. But also, every night at midnight. Every night?
No, it's every Friday night.
Every Friday night yeah. at midnight, you have a midnight toast. Talk about that. I think toasts are the lost art that we haven't focused on yet.
They are cool. And it's a very casual social gathering that lasts, like the actual thing only lasts for about 10 minutes. A little bit before midnight, we throw out some hors d'oeuvres. We invite someone from the community, whether it be a local celebrity or even just like a regular, to come and give the toast at midnight. About a few minutes before midnight, we cut the music. They say their toast. Everybody says cheers. Everybody's focused on one thing for a minute. And they give their toast and turn the music back on. Everybody kind of goes back to whatever they're doing.
So it's a lot of things are happening right there. You've got what we talked about. You got a shared experience happening mm-hmm. with the menu. And then you literally tie everybody together, even if it's just for that 10 minutes, mm-hmm. where the entire room is focused, like you said, and paying attention.
Yes.
I think this is amazing.
You know, somebody come in and say, you know, whatever they want to say.
Yeah.
Let them loose on the mic.
Right.
I've often thought about piping it into my bar at Grand Army. Like I've thought about like getting like you or like someone else like with their phone and just like do like a FaceTime or conference call and then just plug it in and let it rip on the stereo system like through the speakers at Grand Army, because I think it's such a cool
idea. It's something that's always fun. You know, yeah. I mean, that's why we do it at midnight every year on New Year's Eve. Yeah. Everybody likes to clink glasses and say cheers and kind of have like a communal experience when drinking. And when you can do that with everybody in the room.
Yeah.
Rather than it really ties them together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It brings that spirit into what it means to actually be present in a bar room. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, Ludovine is a great restaurant and a great bar, but at that moment, it's a fucking bar.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And absolutely. Everyone's having that shared bar experience.
And you're all together. It creates more like a salon, right? So it's not just I'm here alone or I'm just here with my friend. We're all friends.
Right. And some people,
we all have a common interest, this place.
Yeah. And some people will come out specifically for the toast because they know about it. Then there's other people that are just there at midnight. And it's like, okay, you're over there. This is your first time here. You may not know anything that's getting ready to go on, but get over here, grab a drink, clean glasses with us.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And now we talked a little off the air, but are the toasts getting better and better? Is that like, because again, I think that's a craft as well that's been waylaid.
Well, I mean, there's been some that have been better than others, and
same with drinks,
right?
Yeah.
Same with food from the kitchen.
But I mean, for the most part, when we ask somebody, they really put a lot of thought into it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And they've really come up with some creative stuff. One of the most interesting one was, so we had this kind of block party on the same night as the Midnight Toast, and there's a guy that does short order poetry. I guess he like asks you a couple questions.
And
he writes a poem for you. Mm-hmm. Well, he said that that there was this kid like across the street from him that was playing his guitar, and he kept playing like the same five songs over and over and over, like I guess something by Bon Jovi, Take the Long Way Home, or anyway, he took those songs and took their lyrics and then like mixed them all together to make a poem, and that was his toast.
That's cool.
And
that's awesome.
So yeah, I mean, people have really, they've never been asked to do anything like this before, so they really think long and hard, and they do come up with something creative.
Dude, I can't wait to do it.
When
next time I visit Oklahoma. Hey.
Well, why don't we do one tonight at the bar?
We're definitely gonna do one. Actually, Chris, you're gonna come to Grand Army and sling some of your drinks from Ludivine. Actually,
yes.
From the Beatles album, which is awesome.
Yes.
Really, really excited about. And then we should absolutely do a toast.
Yeah.
So you're gonna be there from 5 to 7 at mm-hmm. Grand Army. That's in downtown Brooklyn at 336 State Street. And next time you're in Oklahoma City, definitely go by Ludivine. That should be your first, middle, and last stop.
Absolutely. Check it out, ludivineokc.com.
Yep. Absolutely, man. Dude, it's great to see you. We've been friends for a very fucking long time, but it's also great to have you in the studio and to have you at the bar. So I'm really excited to have you in town, man.
Yeah, I'm excited too.
Thanks. And then we're going to go get weird in New Orleans next week at Tales of the Cocktail.
Yes. Oh, looking forward to that as well.
I don't know if I'm looking forward to it.
I'm just bracing for it.
Yeah. Well, thanks again for coming on the show, Chris. Check out ludivineokc.com and check out all the other shows on heritageradionetwork.org. And this has been the Speakeasy this week. I'm Damon Bolte.
My name is Souther Teague.
And we'll see you next week. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove.
Hey, what's up? This is Jack Inslee, the executive producer of Heritage Radio Network, also the host of Full Service Radio, and I want to talk to you about brandy. I was lucky enough to visit Louisville, and we all know Kentucky is whiskey territory. However, the best thing I had to drink was brandy. I got to visit Copper and King's distillery, and they make pure copper pot distilled American brandy aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels, matured with rock and roll. That's right. Sonic aging. They're playing music to the barrels. The stuff is double distilled, non-chill filtered, unadulterated by bois, sugar, or caramel color. And this stuff is feisty, rambunctious, with a long, smooth finish. This stuff isn't made exactly in the style of an international brandy or a cognac. It's more along the lines of an American whiskey. I can really be honest here and tell you, I'm not just reading you an ad, I'm giving you a tip. American brandy, you're not seeing it everywhere. Copper and Kings is doing it incredibly well, and they're cool people. The distillery is full of incredible art. Like I said, they're playing rock and roll to the barrels. So again, Copper and Kings, pure copper, pot distilled American brandy, aged in Kentucky bourbon barrels. That's copperandkings.com. Drink it neat, put it in a cocktail, sub it for your brown spirits, experiment, have fun, get funky. This stuff is awesome.